There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Let's start with an update on quarterback Patrick Mahomes. As I mentioned, Andy Reid spoke to the media just a little bit ago and indicated that Mahomes will practice today and will try and do slightly more this week than he was able to do last week. He did practice 2 days last week, but of course did not play against the Packers. Here is head coach Andy Reid.
We do enough stuff where he's got to move around. You get a chance to see him do it. You know, he's moving pretty good. You guys got to see that before our game, so he was out running around. And then I communicate with the doctors.
Right now, where do you stand? Who's going to be your starting quarterback for this Sunday?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'm taking it day by day here. Just going to watch them do their thing and see how they do.
Listen, you get the sense that in this case, it truly is day to day. I think it was the case last week, and ultimately Mahomes was not able to play. This would be week two that he would miss. Do they need him against the Vikings?
Yeah, they do.
They do in this case.
Part of it is because the opponent, right? Like Minnesota has the blueprint on how to beat Kansas City. Kansas City is one of the worst rush defenses in the NFL, and obviously that's something Minnesota does really, really well. So keeping the opposing offense off the field is going to be easy for them. And for me with Mahomes, it's not are you 70 or 80%. You're one of the best players in the NFL, so I'll take 70, 80%. It's how much risk do you have going back on the field, right? If the coach or the doctors tell you there's little risk aversion of a re-injury or a further injury, then I would put him out there and see how healthy he is in the game. I understand it's a great defense, but we need to win this game.
Well, it's interesting. Stefania Bell joined us last week, and clearly she's not evaluating Mahomes per se, but she did say that with this type of injury, the recurrence is high. I think she said 30 to 70%. In a lot of cases, that's a big number, big span as well. So, JoJo, do you get the sense that he really is moving in the right direction?
Well, of course, it feels better, but he's not putting himself, you know, subject to the actual activity that you would have in a football game. And when a knee is dislocated, it dislocates for a reason. And the other thing is that you want it to set properly. So the things that were holding it in place actually have a time to grow back properly. And we talked about this concept last week with active rest, right? You know, you're in this kind of zone where you're testing it out to see where you are, but all the while you're doing that, you're not having active rest. So yes, they need him because the Vikings defense is obviously that dominant. Daniel Jones just had a good introduction to what the Vikings defense can do, but you also need him beyond the Vikings defense, you know, and beyond that game and into the postseason. So you've got to factor that as well. Again, me personally, I think 3 weeks is a better range than at least than trying to rush him just because it feels good when you're not going up against someone pressing you defensively right now.
It's amazing the difference the rosters make, right?
Whew,
Drew Brees gets hurt and the Saints go 5-0 because everything and the infrastructure is built around him.
And Teddy
Bridgewater played well. Pat Mahomes is the guy that compensates for all of the deficiencies that the Kansas City Chiefs have. So being in this situation for Kansas City is so foreign to them because of how tremendous this guy has been. And obviously Matt Moore is not going to hold the fort down like Teddy did based on what we saw in his start. Here's the deal for me. If he's 80 to 100, he out there. And the whole playbook is open. What I have to see from Pat Mahomes is this. Can you run 3 yards or 4 yards to the left to buy yourself time to throw a ball away before you get hit? Or can you even escape enough to get down on the ground to not sustain another shot? Because that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about getting hit and the knee redislocating.
There's no way he's 100.
Like that.
10 days.
No, I'm saying.
I know you're saying he needs to be 80 to 100. And I'm just saying I don't think there's any way that he's 100.
How do you really know? I know this. The Chiefs are 5-3.
Yeah.
Right? And they need a win. Right. And this is a really good football team they're going against. So they'd love to have him. All right. If Andy's not going to jeopardize this guy, I mean, he knows that's his future. So he's going to listen to the doctor. He's going to see what he sees with his eyes. And if Patrick can protect himself and be close to what he is, he's going to play.
But the Chiefs are not in a good place with this situation. To your point, and Joe, to your point, the long term, they're 5-3. They could be 5-4 after this weekend. They go to Tennessee next. We're not even entertaining the fact that this injury could cost them the playoffs. Like, that is a real thing that you have to look at.
Just the Raiders are like, yeah.
That's the difficult spot that they're in.
That's correct, and it underscores what Marcus said. Such a strong juxtaposition to a strong offense or a strong quarterback and a strong team, which is what you saw in New Orleans.
Wendy,
and
all it takes is one sudden movement, though.
I agree, it's a tough spot
in practice. You know? So,
all right, it's Wednesday, so perhaps we'll know a little bit more tomorrow. Meanwhile, the New York Jets did not make any deadline deal trades. They were not active per se yesterday, but they do have a mess to clean up, a potential rift between safety Jamal Adams, certainly their best player on defense, and first-year general manager Joe Douglas. Adams attacked Douglas on Twitter late yesterday. He had this to say: "Any reports of me asking to be traded for the New York Jets are completely false." And he followed up with, "At the end of the week last week, I sat down with the GM and Coach Gase and told them I want to be here in New York. I was told yesterday by my agent that the GM then went behind my back and shot me around to teams even after I asked him to keep me here. Crazy business." Here is the GM earlier today.
"In this case, it's a simple miscommunication. I think someone told him that I was shopping him around, and that's not true. I was not shopping Jamal around. We did not make any calls on Jamal. Teams called us. Teams had been calling us ever since there was a social media issue a few weeks back. We're not interested in moving him. Teams continued to call. I was always taught where I'm from. If a team calls, you listen to what they have to say. At the end of the day, teams called on a lot of our players, a lot of players other than Jamal. And at the end of the day today, we felt like the value that was offered for any player didn't meet or exceed the value that we have for that player as a New York Jet."
Rich Cimini joins us now from Florham Park. And Rich, this is the day after, and now you kind of have to clean this thing up. What's it like there today?
Well, Wendy, the feeling out here today is very Belichickian. Adam Gase took a page out of the Belichick playbook today at his press conference just a little bit earlier. Every time he was asked about the trades, the non-trades, and the Jamal Adams situation, he said, "I'm only answering Miami questions. We're on to Miami." He says that we'll handle this internally. And now that's really out of character for Adam Gase, because usually he's a very open, engaging guy on pretty much any topic you present him with. But he was in lockdown mode today, and my sense is he conveyed the same message to the players in their early morning team meeting. Now, they're at practice right now over my right shoulder, and in about an hour, we're going to get a chance to talk to them, possibly Jamal Adams. My bet is that they're going to be parroting what Adam Gase told them. Let's just focus on Miami. This is a game the Jets absolutely cannot lose. Miami's 0-7. The Jets are 1-6. They need to eliminate distractions. So it's probably a good approach by Adam Gase."
Rich, thank you. I would agree. At this case, buttoning things up there is probably a good idea. But listen, they find themselves in a bit of a mess. You know, they're losing ball games. They got a new head coach, a new GM. It doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page. And now you've got players who are pointing fingers, and it's, what do you do now?
Well, I think it's important to understand, like, Joe Douglas has to take every call, right? I mean, your job as the general manager is to field that call. If I own a house and someone comes, knocks on my door and says, "I'll pay you double the value for your home," I have to listen to that, right? I think what's happening with Jamal Adams is this. He's one of the bright young stars in the NFL, and we talk about the NFL as much of a business as it is. Players understand that there's a relationship aspect of it as well. And every young player goes through this, or most young players go through this, where they think that the relationship part, they want to know that they're valued, that they want to know that you see me as a valuable part of your football team. And the most important thing for a young player, you sometimes feel like you're irreplaceable, that there is no price that someone would give you away for, because it's your first time experiencing pro football. I felt like that as a young kid, like, oh, my team really loves me. My owner and general manager love me. And the reality is that there's the nasty part of it, and that the relationship doesn't carry over or doesn't overweigh the business part of that when it comes to a potential transaction.
We've also talked about communicating and managing relationships and working in an environment where these are younger players who are a different generation. Things are changing. You know, players and coaches, Coach, we've talked about this. You're going to have to coach differently. And it does seem like if there was a misstep, and I agree you have to take the call, it was in not communicating and getting out in front of that with a star player just to sort of lay the groundwork. It might not have eliminated this completely, but you have to think it would have mitigated it to a degree.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the way Joe Douglas approached this, I think, was sound. I mean, you know, he let it be known. He's going to take calls. He has to. I mean, that's part of his job. That's his business. So he's going to do that. To me, you know, you need Adam Gase, you need Greg Williams. Somebody needs, as a coach, needs to go ahead and have a discussion, you know, and make sure this young man understands, hey, we value you. We love you. Yes, there's this business side that, you know, that maybe happened, okay, or did happen. But that's not indicative of how we feel about you. You know, we respect you. We love you. Let's go. And to me, you know, conveying that kind of respect kind of puts that at ease, gives him a chance to just get on with playing good football.
JoJo, and I know you've had some reporting on this as well about potentially where he might have played and what his thoughts were throughout this process.
Well, a couple of things I just want to say is, you know, Jamal Adams spoke of the conversation that he had with general manager Joe Douglas. This is my thought on that. It's clear that when they had that conversation that that Jamal didn't leave that conversation understanding what was going to take place after. So I think it's a given that a general manager takes calls. We know that. But what obviously didn't happen is that Jamal didn't leave that conversation understanding what was going to take place. So that's where I think Joe probably could have improved in terms of the communication between him and his player. I think secondly, he also made the assertion about whether he, you know, demanded a trade and all these other things. My understanding is that he did make clear or at least convey his interest to going to the Cowboys if that was going to happen. I was told that. So it's very different in terms of demanding a trade and also letting others know if you're interested in going to that team if you were to go there. So I wanted to clear that up, you know, with myself, Ryan Clark or what have you. I was told that happened. I definitely stand by that. And then the other thing, too, is just that no one's questioning. Jamal Adams is one of the pulse guys in that locker room. They have been through so much adversity. And so you want to make sure that your pulse guys, that you're in tune with those guys that are setting the chemistry, setting the tone of what's going on with your ball club. I liken that to the Cleveland Browns and Odell Beckham Jr., what he was talking about. He didn't get targeted enough. Now, we can all talk about whether that was an apt comment when you're playing in the rain. But the thing to me that came out of that is that you want to make sure that Jarvis Landry, Odell, those guys feel a certain way because they're the ones that set the tone for the rest of the team. And Jamal Adams is the same way. He's a hard hitter. He is passionate or what have you. So Joe Douglas has to get that relationship right when you're going through adversity, and it pertains to other stars and other teams as well.
Yeah, the relationship is a mess right now because it's public, right?
Yeah,
well. I mean, we know that when you keep things within house, it can still be a mess, but it's more manageable before it hits millions of people, right? And that's been the issue with a lot of these situations. Jalen Ramsey's situation got very ugly when it went public. It could have still been as ugly.
They tried to strong arm.
No. I'm not even talking about the discussion and the conversations, right? That goes on all the time. And to Dan's point, players need to understand that this is business. Beyond how you feel and how important you think you are, it's always business going on in the NFL. But with that being said, I would tell Jamal publicly, don't go to Twitter with any idea of entertain anything. Just keep it in-house. Or even if you feel that way, tell your close people so at least you know who gave the information out.
Well, you're absolutely right. That's the thing. Right. That's the thing on his part. Joe Douglas should have left that conversation, making sure Jamal
with clarity
what was going to happen. And to your point is that Jamal should have not handled that on Twitter. And I think we also should, like, illuminate who it's not even the question of shopping or selling or what have you. Is Jamal Adams untouchable? That's what needs to be,
Period.
Do we think he's untouchable in the media? And also, the Jets need to explain that clearly to him, whether you're untouchable or not.
And to that point, JoJo, in my experience, you probably got two or three guys that's untouchable.
Right.
Everybody else can be touched.
But that's why.
But he needs, because clearly he feels that way, obviously.
But that's why, because we use the words relationship, and we use the words communication, but this isn't a relationship. Like, pro sports, it's not a marriage. It's not a friendship. Like,
well,
they matter.
It is a relationship that has to be managed.
Correct.
It's two people who have to learn how to communicate.
Correct.
Like,
but often when we talk about the relationship or a marriage, you go in with the mindset that, yes, it is irreplaceable or it is a priceless type of relationship. And that's not pro football.
Not a relationship in the sense of husband
but players
and wife.
Need to player needs to see it like
right,
that.
Right,
and
that there's an exchange of appreciation,
sure.
respect, understanding, clarity,
no doubt.
Communication. That type of relationship
under the umbrella.
There you go.
Right. And that's
what
players need to see it as.
Yes.
Ethics
that
is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. That is change.
Yes. Yeah.
And players are mandating that they get more respect.
And it definitely becomes
than they ever have. It's always been, oh, yes, sir, and they just kind of bow down. Now players are saying, well, wait a minute, I'm
And
I'm
we are not going back. We get, we've talked
no,
about
it's
this.
Over. It's evolution.
This is the way things and are listen, headed, and not just in this industry,
and
by
we
the way.
Appreciate Jamal Adams' passion. You can tell that the Jets fans, especially with everything that they've gone through, they appreciate your passion. But we, again, clarity out of communication with the person that's running everything upstairs that just happened with the Kelechi Osemele. Clearly, a breakdown in communication there that I would put on the front office. And in this situation, in terms of picking up calls, don't pick, you know, I don't put that on Joe. And also not taking that to Twitter. Yep.
Yeah, there was a it was enough to go around.
Although I wouldn't have had him coming to the Cowboys.
I mean,
bias.
Neither would Jerry Jones.
Call Marcus Spears on line one about that. There you go.
The 49ers will look to run their record to 8-0. They are on the road Thursday night in Arizona. San Francisco has had a tough time in this matchup, however, losing 8 straight against the Cardinals. The Niners last beat the Cards in the final game of the Jim Harbaugh era.
I do.
The 49ers commit to the run game more than any other team. Their 13 rushing touchdowns this year, almost double their 2018 total. And that includes 3 by Tevin Coleman this past week against Carolina. They are one of 2 undefeated teams, and for that reason, you have to consider them a contender, certainly for the postseason, but also for Miami. It's been interesting to me to hear people say, hey, the 49ers won't go the distance because Jimmy Garoppolo is just managing this. Who cares?
Exactly.
It does not
the
matter.
The coaching is that.
Yeah,
they
can't do it.
Kyle turns it into a math equation every play, and he's always in an advantage.
And if he continues to do that, this will continue to happen. Also, new on NFL Live this afternoon, Dan, thank you from the Houston Chronicles, John McClain. Deshaun Watson will not be able to handle the play ball call tonight before the World Series game at Minute Maid Park. He's had a minor setback in his left eye that's been swollen since the Oakland game. He needs to rest and keep it out of the lights. He will, however, play against the Jaguars. Sunday night, we'll pit one of the league's most dynamic rushing quarterbacks against someone who's less so. Lamar Jackson has more career rushing yards than Tom Brady in 254 fewer games played. In fact, Jackson matched RG3 as the fastest quarterback to 1,000 career rushing yards, while Brady was 100 games slower than any quarterback in league history to make that mark. Here is Lamar Jackson today.
Tom Brady definitely the one at the top.
He's the GOAT of all GOATs.
Definitely got 6 Super Bowls. He definitely GOAT. Definitely. I'm not going against Brady because I'm not playing against him, actually, the defense is. But, you know, to get a win versus him, it'll be pretty cool. So I'm going there trying to win.
Lamar Jackson, that's Lamar, that is how you say it. He'll have a tough task against the Patriots. Belichick's defense plays man coverage 70% of the time. He has 15 interceptions in man, both tops in the league. Jackson only has 1 interception against man coverage himself and averages a whopping 13 yards per scramble versus man. Listen, let's start right there. Lamar Jackson against that Patriots defense, because they are the best defense holistically in the league.
Well, you talked about the Patriots and how much man coverage they play. And when they play man, they blitz you. And so Lamar has been eating teams that do, like, I think the last 3 times someone played man and blitzed them, he's gone for like 30, 29, and 28. So the Patriots, I don't think they're going to play the traditional pressure way that they have. I think they're going to go after him. They did like Josh Allen, an athletic quarterback, put 8 up in the box, and it's going to be that zero pressure. And all 8 are going to come. But then there's going to be some guys that hang back. They're not going to single spy him or double spy him. They'll triple or quadruple spy him, keep him in the pocket, and then rush when he has to hold the ball for a second. They'll do it another way where, again, they're going to put all 8 guys up into the box. But then 3 of those guys will come pressure internally, and they'll force him to get pressure up in his face. But then the guys out on the edge, they're going to be kind of like a fence. They're going to wait and hang with vision on the quarterback and just make sure to corral him, keep him in the pocket, and even if he starts to kind of get out of the pocket, be ready to move laterally. And then they're going to put some athletes or some different athletes on the field to keep the big guys, squeeze on the edge, put the athletes, put them inside, and then make sure that they keep the contain so they get that pinch from the outside that tells the quarterback, okay, I can get vision on the outside, I can move to the outside, but then they have a guy like Jamie Collins or Calhoun on the outside that can move out in space with some of the better athletic quarterbacks in the NFL. So I don't anticipate New England to just line up, play man coverage, and blitz him. They're going to blitz him strategically to force him to stay in the pocket and keep. They're not going to single spy him. They'll double or triple
spy
him.
Well, they're smart if they're nothing else. And that's what they do. That's right.
That's what they do. But what they do is they design their pressures to combat each opponent. Mm-hmm. So they're taking away whatever your strengths are. Well, the strength of Lamar is to take off and run.
Sure.
So they're going to have spies that have the speed to get him down. That's the key. You can't just have it. Marcus, no offense, but you can't be the one spying. Okay, so it's like...
You don't got one play left in you?
Hell no. Didn't I just tell y'all I keep running to the bench?
But seriously, we need to have a spy with the speed to get Lamar down, and that's the key.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll see safeties involved. You'll see fast linebackers involved. It'll be
Josh Allen and Lamar are different players, but they both are really good athletes, right? And so to Coach's point, I don't know if New England is going to rush or spy with the same guys they did with the Josh Allen. Maybe they have some more linebackers or secondary people in those roles to make sure that there's more speed on the field.
And they're always beating the protection.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing about it is Bill's going to study the protection, understand what they like, and he's going to attack so that the pressure they do bring is effective at creating pressure.
Man, it's like Big Ben. You can set your clock to that because that's what Bill Belichick does every single week. All right, listen, I'm not being funny when I say Tom Brady has different strengths. He's a different kind of quarterback, clearly. I said I wasn't being funny. What's he got to do here against this Baltimore defense?
Well, Baltimore's defense has kind of been up and down this year. There's been opportunities for them to make plays, and they've made them. They've also shown some stuff on tape where you feel really good as a play caller that you can take advantage of some stuff. You know, if you look back at the Seahawks game and some of the stuff that they were able to do against the Baltimore Raven defense, I think that the power game, getting downhill in their run game, and then the zone, the double teams that you can get against this Ravens defensive line that's not been dominant is there. Double moves, especially on situations where third downs where DBs are going to be sitting at sticks. You can double move them at the third and 11. Let's run a hook and go at them. So I think that there's some vulnerability there. And then the Ravens is a flow defense. You can pull one side of your offensive line, get everyone to go that way, and then give the ball running back away from that natural kind of flow of your offensive line because those defenders are so aggressive. So there's some stuff for New England to take advantage of.
You like this Ravens defense, Coach?
I don't think this is as strong of a unit as it has been in years past. I saw them, you know, against Cleveland. I was there actually celebrating Brian Billick going into the Hall of Fame or the Ring of Honor. The bottom line is they were really poor that day. And I see problems with screens and play passes and balls over the middle, easy things that Tom Brady really likes that they've allowed. They allowed it to Baker that day. They've allowed it throughout the year. And so I worry about that.
First thing they got to do is eliminate Sony Michel in this run game if they're going to have any chance. Mm-hmm. Because, look, here's the deal. When you go into games like this, especially even with New England being as good as they've been, you're trying to keep Lamar Jackson off the field as much as possible, right? Because those extra possible possessions that he could have by you going three and out is a no bueno. So I would go into this game, if I'm New England Patriots, establishing Sony Michel early. If we can get the run game going, turn it into play action. I know it's very general to talk in that way, but it's really not about just putting points on the board. It's about keeping number eight over there and having him watch the game. Because one thing Lamar is going to do, as good as we talk about the New England Patriots and how good they are on defense, you give him enough opportunities, he's going to burn you. He's going to get you eventually if he's out there long enough. So I would almost play keep away.
Mm. Yeah, well, listen, he's electric with the football in his hands. Even his critics would give you that before the draft when we discussed him so thoroughly. Meanwhile, the Bears hoping to get back in the win column this weekend. How will Matt Nagy feel about going for extra yardage this week?
Look, I'll just be brutally clear. Zero thought of throwing the football. Zero thought of running the football. You understand me? That's exactly what it was. So it's as simple as that.
The Bears lost on Sunday after kicker Eddie Pinheiro missed what would have been the go-ahead field goal in the final minute. Head coach Matt Nagy criticized for the decision to take a knee prior to the attempted kick. He defended that decision both Sunday and again on Monday. But listen, the problems in Chicago go well beyond the end of that game. And Michelle Steele joins us now with what's going on today with the Bears.
Absolutely, Wendy. You know, as far as the kicker goes, I don't think I've heard as many questions regarding the kicking situation in Chicago this season since the end of last season. And we all know what happened there. And here's the issue. Eddie Pinheiro, the new kicker in Chicago, perhaps inadvertently revealed yesterday to reporters that the left hash was not his preferred place to kick at the end of that game. But here's the thing. Matt Nagy did not want to engage on that topic for very good reasons. The rest of this division is pulling away. The Bears stand right now at 4-3. And here's the thing. Matt Nagy just has bigger problems to address.
Big thing is just for me as a head coach is that's a tough way to lose stating the obvious, but we look at it as like in a lot of different ways where we could have done a lot of different things to make it not come down to that kick. Usually that's the case. I mean, it goes back to for us what we talked about before, but I just want to it's for us. We got to move forward. If we keep holding on to that, then it hurts us for the Eagles, and that's not really what we want.
The issue for the Bears, of course, is not the kicker. It's that Nagy appears to trust his kicker more to put the game away than he does his quarterback right now. Mitchell Trubisky is throwing for fewer yards, fewer touchdowns, and he's scrambling significantly less than he did at this point last year. That's one of his most potent weapons. As Matt Nagy told us just a few minutes ago, he is in a real low right now, Mitchell Trubisky. And that is why I can reveal to you some behind-the-scenes machinations here at Hallis Hall. Matt Nagy actually went to Mitchell Trubisky this week and said, hey, watch the broadcast game film. Not the game film that we watched, all 22. Watch the actual broadcast game film. Look at your facial expressions. Look at your body language. See how that's translating. And just try to learn from that. And so that is what Trubisky did for the first time. He actually watched the broadcast copies of the game. And he said he looked tense. He looked super serious. And he said, quote, that's not me. He has 9 more games now, Wendy, to show the Bears and show Bears fans the real Mitchell Trubisky. Wendy?
Michelle, thank you. Really interesting. And all of those things are true. That is what he looks like, and he looks like a quarterback whose confidence, Dan, has been shaken.
Well, it comes from the head coach. I mean, This has been the storyline all season, that the head coach has no confidence in. I mean, you watch the play calls. Every one of their passes is like 5 yards or less. You can see it in the play call that I don't trust this quarterback. Watch the end of the game. How can you stand up there on the podium and say there was no thought with a timeout in your bag? There was no thought of running the football or no thought of throwing the football. That's because the quarterback knows you don't trust me. You don't feel good. Now, listen, part of that is because Mitchell has not played well. That is a warranted thing. But at the end of the day, your job, one of your jobs as a coach is to continuously instill confidence in your player so the body language doesn't fall off. And I'd put some of that on Matt Nagy just as much as I would Mitchell Trubisky.
Michelle made a great point. I mean, they wouldn't put the kicker out there if they didn't think he could make a 41-yard field goal. They clearly had confidence. Now, he didn't, but they had confidence that he could, more so than anything else they could have done with the folks at their disposal. Marcus?
It's a tough situation for both of them. It's a tough situation for Matt Nagy, and I understand what you're saying about Mitchell Trubisky, but when you think about, right, this relationship between quarterback and head coach, especially when they brought you in as an offensive guy to get a guy groomed. And then sometimes you may just realize he don't have it. Like he doesn't. That's a terrible place to be in. I mean, when Matt LaFleur took Green Bay job, guess what he knew?
Sure.
This guy got it. Right? Freddie Kitchens is learning with Baker Mayfield right now. Maybe some things I thought he was good at, he just doesn't have it. So as we see this season unfold, as we see Mitchell Trubisky struggle, Matt Nagy putting him in better situations, and I agree with that, Dan, but this may be one of those situations in-house where you say, I don't know if this guy's...
I'll say this. I watched last year's 12-4, and how did they do it? And he stayed in Mitchell's wheelhouse.
Yep.
Matt Nagy has drifted away from that, probably wanted to grow the offense. Good intention. Grow the offense, do a little bit more. But in my opinion, if they would get back to the things that Mitchell is good at, some of the RPO stuff, some of the running on the perimeter, just some of the easier throws if you're going to have throws. But if I'm 3rd-and-2 and 3rd-and-3, which I've seen several times now when I'm watching Bears tape, I'm seeing no back in the backfield. You're putting it all on a drop back, to make him a drop back quarterback. That's not his strength. So play to his strength, stay in his wheelhouse, Matt Nagy. And then, I'm sorry, I didn't know that we had a timeout. We had time. and we didn't center the ball or get it on the favorite hash of the kicker, to me,
it's a gross mismanagement.
You have to do that. That's irresponsible. If you have that information and you have that ability, it's not like you're hurried at the end of the game.
They should be playing two-minute football. The Bears should learn from the Ravens and how the Ravens put Lamar Jackson in consistent positions to do what he does best. They don't ask him to do the things that he doesn't do well.
Right.
That's what they've done with Mitchell Trubisky this year. Correct. And so if you're going to tell him to watch the broadcast, I would say, Coach, check your game plan because it should be better for his skill set.
Well, Sunday, the first time this season, the Bears have gained 300 yards in a game. All right, listen, moving in the right direction. That's good. That's better than the opposite, I suppose.
It's going to be a big test this weekend, though. Like that run game for Minnesota is going to be a little different than they've seen.
Yeah, no, we're going to find out how well they did in fixing some of those problems.
I want to be, in my next life, Marcus's facial expressions.
I'm always pulling for the development. All right, the defense has a chance to come together. Linebacker fits have to be better. Darren Lee's not playing a lot now, which is good because he wouldn't fit anything properly. So I think they're better at linebacker and what they're doing right now, and they're going to have a good game against Dalvin Cook.
All right. Good game has not been the case for the Cincinnati Bengals. They remain winless and in so have benched their quarterback, Andy Dalton. He will not start, and instead they will turn to Ryan Finley. He's upset with the timing and had this to say today.
I think that's an unfortunate thing. I mean, it happened 3 hours before the trade deadline. You know, I wish it would have at least, you know, if he was thinking about it, at least let me try to see if I could end up somewhere else or, you know, at least see if there is interest in possibly getting traded. At that point, the way it was all handled, there wasn't enough time to even have that happen.
Coach, listen, I see you nodding your head, and I understand, and I certainly understand feeling that way, but I just don't, you know, I mean, his play is a big reason why.
Yeah.
And he's still on that team. They're one play away from needing him again. I know it's human nature, but I don't know. I don't like that.
He makes a valid point. It's like, okay, if you're going to do this 48 hours, we were talking about it on the set yesterday, you know, 48 hours prior to that, if that decision had come down, maybe you have a chance to go get a draft pick for this guy. And you're going to build for the future anyway. You're going to find out what Finley can do. It's not about Andy Dalton going forward. You've made that decision. And so you know it's not him, so why not go ahead and get something in return if you can?
I suppose if you know
and I get about Andy Dalton's feelings.
Right. I'm not worried about feelings either.
That's what I'm saying.
The
Bengals are absolutely thinking he's a backup. He's one of the best backups in the league.
From their perspective. Now I guess to your point, if they're moving on permanently, it does change things a little bit.
But I'm not even though the season is probably done.
They might need him.
I'm not trading him. Why?
No. So, Coach's point is you're building for the future. Andy Dalton does nothing for your future. Right. That's why your job
space.
As a coach.
You could have got a draft pick.
You're
eating
up
cap
space. To
do
what's best for your organization.
Yep.
And what's best for your organization is not to have Andy Dalton going there with Ryan Finley going, hey, nice job. It's to go get some value for him.
What's best for the Cincinnati front office is to have Andy Dalton under contract this offseason and barter for him. Look, regardless of if the trade happened yesterday or if you go into the offseason with a guy that has shown to be a franchise quarterback, you're going to get a lot for him. Well,
The difference between Miami in the offseason or now in the offseason is the draft.
Yeah, that's
the big difference.
Identifying this draft, though. Like who? Where would Andy Dalton be? I'm sure they go through these scenarios.
You got to get in line.
The Bengals are
way behind guys like Teddy Bridgewater.
In this particular class,
we
got to
remember that it's new head coach, right? Zach Taylor, gone through this type of
situation. I'm telling y'all right now, this is a bargaining chip for Cincinnati.
Well,
and they holding it. They are.
If it was
clearly like a guy either coming out of college or even Teddy, like Teddy's going to be a hot commodity and somebody's going to pay him. It ain't going to be Cincinnati, though.
Nope.
Well, you hate to say it, but in this case, it is what it is because the trade deadline came and went. So it's really, he can feel that way. It's a moot point going forward.
It sucks to just be in that locker room, though.
Yeah, that's not fun. All right, listen, let's talk about Baker Mayfield and the Browns. They were the new hot thing coming into the season. It has not panned out that well. Baker has struggled. His team has struggled. And today, we started seeing some cracks in the armor. Baker Mayfield got in a heated exchange. This happens when you get frustrated. with a reporter, went back and forth, got all worked up, and he didn't stop. And, you know, he says this via Twitter. Everyone wants to hear the truth until they actually get it. I am who I am, and I always have been. Don't call it emotional when it's convenient, and then passion when it fits. I care about winning. So, yeah, I'm frustrated. If it was, I think he's saying if it's okay to act like you want to lose, you know, that means I'm complacent. My sense of urgency is at an all-time high, and if I offend anybody along the way, that's too bad. It just, look, he's, you know, he's, there's some fractures there, and you can see it. And if you didn't see the exchange with the reporter, but we did earlier, and it's clear he's coming a little bit unglued.
My man over here.
Here we go. I knew that.
Listen,
yeah.
They came in with tons of expectations, right, this year?
Yeah.
And
falling short.
And and they've kind of crashed short, I would say. And there's a saying in the NFL that you either are humble or it will humble you. And I think we're watching that almost week by week with Baker. I've been a huge Baker supporter and a Baker believer, but it hasn't translated to good performances or wins this year. And to everyone's point, and this is why this is happening today, is there was an expectation that they were going to be a significantly better football team and he would be playing better. And that's not happening. And so we're watching this unfold almost day by day of the what if. This whole offseason was, well, what if it goes bad? Then this is going to happen. And we've watched it go bad and watched the what ifs transpire.
And what we also said in the offseason is that's when we'll know. When things go south, when there's trouble and conflict and all of those things, how will they react? How will Baker Mayfield react? Freddie Kitchens. And that's what we're seeing. And I'm not sure the
I'm
early returns are positive.
I'm not going to be normal Swaggle here, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to be rational. And I'm going to say this. And this is what I believed from the beginning of Baker Mayfield getting into the league. And it's not just about Baker. Cleveland has a lot of issues. It ain't just Baker Mayfield. To his credit, it's a lot of things going on around him that's a problem. Baker has always cared. What did we hear everybody say? Chip on the shoulder, moxie, he's a leader. And I told Dan, we said, don't get up. I said, they don't care about that in the NFL. Like those players you playing against, they don't care who you were when you came out of college. That was the number one thing I learned. The first thing Larry Allen told me was everybody out here was all Americans. When I showed up to the Cowboys camp, I'm playing against Larry Allen in training camp, one of the best offensive linemen, if not the best offensive lineman to ever play. And he told us as rookies straight up, he said, man, we don't care where y'all was drafted, what y'all names are. We want to find out if you can help us win, period. And I think Baker is learning that. College protects you against that. You're insulated. Look, Jalen Hurts couldn't even throw the ball till he got to Oklahoma. You can figure out ways on that level. When you get up here, man, you got to put big boy pants on. And when you're young, you got to be hush-hush and go quietly about your business until you gain that level of respect where you can say things like Baker has said. Now everybody still has a target on him.
Do you want to hear crazy? I'm an eternal optimist, okay?
No doubt, Coach.
Jay, I believe
in hope, and I believe in, you know, the opportunity.
That's
nice?
Good, Coach.
All right, now, Cleveland, if they just don't panic, which I'm seeing panic right now.
That is panic.
But if they wouldn't panic, I knew they were going to lose to New England. I knew that, okay? But I still said what I saw against Seattle, where they really lost a game they should have won. And if they can just look at the second half schedule, they've got an easy schedule, kind of how it was last year when it laid out and they went on a run. They could actually climb back in the race because the AFC, a 500 team, right around 500, is probably going to get in.
Yep.
So all they have to do is not panic, not abandon the ship, stay the course, believe, and play some good football and quit worrying about Twitter and all that crap.
Lead with your play in the short term,
and that
will bring great dividends.
This is what's going on with Baker. When you play quarterback in the NFL and you're loud, the spotlight is always going to be on you. What I mean by loud is, like, you are always talking. And that's Baker. And I've loved the competitiveness. But the spotlight's always going to be on you. And so when you lose, a spotlight's always going to be on you. And when you win, so when you're loud, it never gets to leave you. When you're quiet as a quarterback and you go through rough stretches, the spotlight won't follow you because you're not being loud. And that's what Baker's realizing is, if you're going to continue to talk the way you've talked and the losses follow, that light is going to continue.
Let me give you a perfect example. Early in the show, we talked about Jamal Adams. And I said, just don't go public with it, right? These are the situations where players really lose. You put yourself in such a bad situation. Even if you're right.
Right.
Right. It creates something within that environment that you in on an NFL team that you can't bottle that back up. Like Jamal is a tremendous player. And we always say, well, some dudes get the right to do things that they can't. Right. And everybody would look at Jalen Ramsey's situation as he won. Right. And when he got traded to L.A. Sure. But at the end of the day, you know what the Jacksonville Jaguars didn't have to do?
Pay him.
They didn't have to pay him and they didn't have to trade him. Like, so I just always say, as a player, to your point, don't be loud, right? Go, if I'm Jamal, if I'm Baker, and I got a statement to make about the team or I want to win, I'm telling everybody that in private. I'm keeping all of that stuff in private until it's done. Right. Like, it's just, he talks too much. That's all I can garner from.
Without the results.
Without the results, he talks too much, man.
He's young, so it's easy to hide behind the I am who I am. Mm-hmm. I've always been this person. I will continue. I'm all for everybody being who they are. It does not mean you don't make adjustments. It doesn't mean you don't learn adjust.
You learn.
With wisdom. Maybe that comes with age, which I got a lot of. So, speaking of the Giants, they acquired Leonard Williams from the Jets on Monday, a day before the trade deadline. The D lineman practiced for the first time today. Williams said he'll be able to learn the defense in time to contribute when the Giants do face the Cowboys on Monday Night Football.
You know, I'm definitely not trying to think about contract stuff yet. You know, I'm more trying to focus on getting to know my teammates, getting to know the locker, just showing who I am to this new team. You know what I mean? It was a long day, a lot going on through my mind. But at the same time, you know, I'm privileged and grateful for the Giants for giving me the chance to come play here. And, you know, it's been an easier transition since I'm close by, like I said. It's not like I had to pack a bag and, you know, get on a flight and go somewhere and have to worry about who's going to watch my dogs and who's going to do this and who's going to do that. You know, I basically just came right down the street. I still have a lot to prove, like I said, to this team and to my new teammate.
Well, he's true. It was a short trip. The New York Jets did not make any deadline day trades. That was yesterday on Tuesday, but they do have a mess to clean up. It is clearly a rift between star safety Jamal Adams and first-year GM Joe Douglas. Adams attacked Douglas via Twitter late Tuesday and said this: the Jets safety says any reports of me asking to be traded from the New York Jets are completely false. He followed up with, at the end of the week, I sat down with the GM and Coach Gase and told them I want to be here in New York. I was told yesterday by my agent that the GM then went behind my back and shot me around to teams even after I asked him to keep me here. Crazy business. We could talk at length about this, but first, here's the GM.
In this case, it's a simple miscommunication. I think someone told him that I was shopping him around, and that's not true. I was not shopping Jamal around. We did not make any calls on Jamal. Teams called us. Teams had been calling us ever since there was a social media issue a few weeks back. We're not interested in moving him. Teams continued to call. I was always taught where I'm from. If a team calls, you listen to what they have to say. At the end of the day, teams called on a lot of our players, a lot of players other than Jamal. And at the end of the day today, we felt like the value that was offered for any player didn't meet or exceed the value that we have for that player as a New York Jet.
Listen, I think Joe Douglas is correct. You do take the call. That's part of your job description. But we talked about this earlier. I do think that there's a lot to be said for getting out in front of this with your player, especially your tone-setting players, which we can agree Jamal Adams is, and being quite clear on the communication as to where you stand, where this is headed, and then they don't have to like it.
Yeah.
But that clear line of communication can go a long way.
I don't disagree with Jamal at all. I just don't like the fact that he put it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my only thing. Because, look, this is a situation where the Jets have to go to Jamal and tell him, look, this is our plan for you. This is who we think you are. This is what we appreciate you, because you don't find cornerstone players. They not just out there walking around. This dude a cornerstone player for any franchise. So for you to mismanage a relationship and for him to feel slighted by management is a whole nother issue. I just don't like Jamal going to social media, because then it puts him, it creates this narrative of selfishness, and he wants everybody to know his side of the story. Nah, he should have enough juice in New York to tell them, hey, this is how I feel about what has just transpired. And there should be some conversations going on about around that. But the Jets have a responsibility to go to him and clear this thing up.
Well, not only that, but it's just not accurate. I mean, you know, Joe Douglas is basically saying that he did not pick up the phone. And so for him to say that publicly, there's 31 other teams that know whether that's true or not. So that's a pretty strong thing to say if, you know, you weren't being truthful about it. So it's one thing to go on Twitter because you're airing it out publicly. The other thing, it's just not accurate. And then you were saying, you know, they need to establish a strong line of communication. I think Joe Douglas did try to do that by having the conversation. It's just that Jamal Adams obviously didn't leave with that understanding as to how things were going to transpire after that based on the things that, you know, he did say. But kudos to Jamal for having, you know, a lot of passion and playing in the secondary very strong, you know, being the pulse of that team through adversity. All those things are commendable. Yeah. But just in terms of how it's handled and splitting hairs between whether you asked for a trade demand and you were interested, you communicated to others that you were interested if the trade was
well. And in either way, these two parties have to go on together. They are moving forward, so you got to find a way around it. Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield got into a testy exchange today with a reporter before abruptly walking out of his media availability. He was asked if the Browns had lacked urgency on a possession at the end of the first half during Sunday's game on the road in New England.
There was a penalty, so we were negative yardage.
No, but there was a lot of time between snaps.
Well, when the penalty happened, then we're behind the chains. No, stop saying but. I just told you the clock was running and we had a penalty. Do you want to give them the ball back? No, you don't play. You don't know it. That's just plain and simple. Was I happy with the drive? No, we didn't score points. It's the dumbest question you could ask. What? Jesus, Tony.
Uh-oh. All right. We followed up. Via Twitter, Marcus, everybody wants to hear the truth until they actually get it. I am who I am and always have been. Don't call it emotional when it's convenient and then passion when it fits. I care about winning, so yeah, I'm frustrated. If I was to act like it's okay to lose, then y'all would say that I've gotten complacent. My sense of urgency is at an all-time high, and if I offend anybody along the way, that's too bad. Look, be who you are, JoJo. We talked about this, but, you know, it looks like the nerves are fraying. I would say that.
Well, a couple things in that exchange. I know Baker was asking to be allowed to finish what he was saying. And then there's trying to balance, you know, asking a question and then coming across maybe like, you know, more than the person who's actually on the field. And then there's also the line of respect and passion. So those are two different things. And we can, you know, talk about whether what we saw there. But I just think that with Baker Mayfield, I have no problem with his moxie and his passion. I think the thing that you just want to think about is when you express passion in such a way, or you talk a lot, what you also do by effect is increase the pressure on yourself in right. times of adversity. That's the issue that I have. I love the moxie. I love that you can raise all boats with your emotion, but just be careful of the increased pressure that you put on yourself. That's all.
That was Dan's point exactly, is that when things start to go south and you're loud, that spotlight just stays right with you.
Yeah.
Because that's how it works.
There's a reality to this. So I had a friend on Twitter, Joe, thanks, point out that it was a reporter in Cleveland that has a little bit of a history pushing the envelope with some questions, right? I understand that. And I understand that that might be the case with the reporter. But one of the things we get taught when we go to college and then when we go to the NFL, when it comes to the media, is you don't control the question, but you always control your answer. And so I understand that it might be not the person you want asking the question that you don't want. But when you're the face of a franchise and a CEO of a billion-dollar company, which is the starting quarterback, you control your answer. And it doesn't matter if you like the question or not.
I agree with Baker that he should be allowed to finish what he was saying, because he kept trying. He kept trying to answer it, and the person would say, but.
Yeah,
and
he
didn't finish what he was trying to say. Sure. And then there's a line of, you know, based on his answer, do you know what you're talking about with how he's explaining it? But then there's a line of respect and passion. So, I mean, you know, there's a... A lot of things to balance there.
You have a responsibility to control that. My sister's a police officer. I tell her all the time, like, so many people have conversations. I say it because we expect you to have the responsibility of doing your job, just like Baker Mayfield. A part of the media has always been you get these reporters that want to push buttons. You get guys that's arrogant. You have all of that situation. Control the narrative. You're the professional in the room of football. Mm-hmm. So just relax, take it, and then move on, because he ain't going to affect your paycheck.
Easier said than done, but don't take the bait. That's the thing. No, I'm with you. Don't take the bait.